Yes. So, hi, my name's Charlie Patel. I'm a PhD researcher from Loughborough University.
Just for extended sound, can you hear?
Okay, so my PhD project is just one of the sites in Cumbria. We're at Winton Hill in Plumpton. My project is looking at various sediment ponds that have been created through different agri-environment schemes and funding routes. So what we're aiming to do is, instead of looking at how much sediment and nutrients they might capture during high flow events and erosion events and runoff events, I'm going to be looking at the macroinvertebrate biodiversity, which is insects in the water, and to what extent do these sediment ponds provide biodiversity for aquatic life.
Right, could you explain what the sediment ponds actually are? What do they do? What's their function?
Yes, so these sediment ponds behind us, they act as almost mini wetlands for agricultural runoff. So what happens is when fields are bare or being farmed, under high rainfall events, you can get a lot of erosion from soils and nutrients. And the primary purpose is to try and prevent this soil and sediment and nutrients entering rivers and other adjacent water bodies. So these ponds act as a storage area and function essentially to stop all of that sediment and nutrients, or most of it, reaching other water bodies that might be impacted. So it's preventing the issue going further downstream and trying to hold that water on the farming land before it reaches that riverine ecosystem.
What is the issue? Why would that be a problem if it reached other watercourses?
So it's a bit of an issue because agricultural pollution and the value of the soil is in the nutrients and, for example, the phosphorus levels. They're ever increasing in rivers. So having these ponds here, they function as almost storage areas, which essentially prevents or limits that water quality damage into river ecosystems that we're seeing on the news with poor water quality across the UK.
So the things like phosphorus, does that come from farmers, from the slurry, from chemicals, from?
It can range from multiple sources. So it can naturally occur in the soils, but if it's arable and farmed, it can also come from putting nutrients on the land. But most of it in this area, because we're in a nitrate vulnerable zone, most of it will come naturally from the soils themselves. So there's only so much that you can essentially put on the land in these nitrate vulnerable zones. So they have to think about how they're storing and capturing nitrate, phosphorus, and other chemicals and nutrients within the farming industry.
Okay. Excellent. Right. We'll talk a bit about what's yeah. behind you now. So, can you explain what you've come here today to do?
So we're essentially here today to provide an insight into the biodiversity that these sediment ponds can provide. So what I'll be showing you is the technique I use in order to sample these ponds and how we actually investigate the biodiversity and the essentially aquatic life in terms of the macroinvertebrate community, and essentially how these ponds, or what different species and taxa that these ponds can support in terms of macroinvertebrate biodiversity.
And why is biodiversity important?
So biodiversity is important, particularly in, I think, an agricultural setting. And as you can see, there's very little in terms of trees and hedgerows these days. So having these ponds here, they provide a new source of biodiversity, particularly for aquatic life. And also the aquatic life in them can support other species such as amphibians. So you have newts and frogs, as well as birds, which obviously often can utilise these ponds as important areas if it's there, essentially.
So you mentioned sort of the aquatic life. What kind of life is there in there?
So in these particular ponds, what I'm particularly looking at is the macroinvertebrates. So the macroinvertebrates are essentially small insects and invertebrates such as snails, mayflies, beetles, and a whole host of other taxa within that. They actually use these ponds as a really good area to support their community. So yeah.
What kind of levels have you find it? Are they quite sort of, are they quite rich in biodiversity, or are they lacking? Does it depend on the climate? The
yeah. So these ponds and the biodiversity can vary greatly from little to a huge amount of numbers in terms of species and taxa that are in the ponds. It's based on a few factors, really, or quite a few, particularly in ponds because they're quite complex. They're very heterogeneous, which means essentially they're very different from each other. Even though you've got two next to each other here, they'll be quite different in terms of, as you can see, just based on size alone, size and shape, depth. You've got environmental variables, such as the nutrient content, macrophyte growth, whether it's being, obviously this hasn't been grazed, but in the background we've got some cows. So grazing can affect the biodiversity value. So there's a whole host of other factors, even to the smallest things like fish. So if you've got fish present in the pond, they'll impact which predators might be about in the pond.
And this might be a sort of moot question, but what would happen if these ponds weren't here?
So if these ponds weren't here, you'd probably end up with runoff just going straight through here and into the adjacent stream or the nearest river, and it'll find its own way into another pathway. But having these ponds here, that limits how much water and sediment is entering that watercourse.
Okay. And lastly, we'll talk a bit about the impact on the farmers and the land. So when there is these, oh, in fact, that's one thing you should explain, the frequency of the flood events.
Yes.
So how frequent are they, and what's the impact on the farming industry or the farmer if they happen without these?
So I guess, what was the question?
Yeah,
sorry,
no,
again.
Sorry, about
yeah.
80 questions in there.
No.
The frequency of
frequency,
of large events and the impact on the farmers.
Okay. So in terms of the frequency, it obviously depends on these extreme weather events that we're having. One of the biggest years was probably 2023 with Storm Babette at the end of that year. That saw obviously a huge amount of runoff in, particularly in one location that I was doing other field work in Herefordshire. That had a massive effect. It caused runoff into towns. It can also cause flooding if it's that extreme. So the impact of the farmers, obviously, if a downstream community does flood, then they might have some very unhappy customers in terms of flooding that come back to them and say, why haven't you done something about this? So that impact on the farmers can be important, but also the impact, the economic cost, because if you're losing a lot of soil and nutrients that they've put on the land, then they're going to have to find a way to put that back onto the land that they've already lost. So there's an economic cost. So it's about having a solution or trying to find a way that we can manage the land where the farmers are saving money, but also they're adding additional things into the landscape and essentially helping other communities around them develop other projects like this. Because if you have lots of smaller projects like this, then obviously it's going to protect a large amount of houses or a larger community, a larger farm. It's all to do with the economic costs that such features could save.
In fact, one thing we should mention as well is the actual project itself, the CFS, the different, I know you said that one of them was spent or something.
Yes, yeah. So there's different strands of funding. So some farmers might choose to do it privately. So that if they have the machinery and manpower already to create things, like sediment ponds, then they might do that off their own backs, just because they see it as their own problem, so they might create one. Additionally, there's other funding routes, particularly through agri-environment schemes. They can actually support projects in terms of building sediment ponds. So there's a specific grant where farmers will get paid to build sediment ponds and protect water quality. So farmers can choose to go through that route. And you have catchment sensitive advisors who can come out and help you and support essentially that, making an application for those different grants. But you also have private companies that might be interested in. So you have a lot of water companies now are investing in things like natural flood management or sediment ponds as a way to protect the rivers that little bit extra. So that's another route that landowners and farmers might take, is interacting with other partners in trying to find a natural sort of component where they can come together and work together to build such features.
Excellent. Two more quick ones. One is, is it legally the responsibility of the farmer then, because they can't control the weather, how does that responsibility fall upon them?
I mean, the difficulty is that there's no, that all of these schemes are optional. So
no, I mean, to create a pond, like, you know, you say some of them off their own.
Yeah, yeah.
To protect the village.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah.
Why is it fall upon on the farmer to do it?
It shouldn't fall upon the farmer. Just the farmer. I think there's other factors at play.
Okay.
For example, if you've got a big housing estate that's being built,
yeah,
and you've got more concrete, more runoff,
yeah, yeah,
and things like that. But if there's a clear, obviously, problem in terms of you've got a large number of farms around you or surrounding you, then what is the best way to sort of
mitigate
that runoff and prevent that runoff?
And the last one, just so we can, this might be a good segue into talking to Chris.
Yeah.
What work have you been doing with the EA?
So my work with the Environment Agency, I should have probably explained this at the start, but so my PhD is partly sponsored by the Environment Agency. So one of the things we're hoping to do is provide this back to the farmers and the policymakers and say, look, we've got the evidence here to show that not only do sediment ponds provide nutrient settlements and sediment settlement areas, but actually it's also having a positive effect on biodiversity. Even though we've just looked at the macroinvertebrate community, we're highlighting that these ponds are actually as important for macroinvertebrates as it is for sediment runoff and soil runoff. So hopefully combine that with the evidence that we already have in terms of the runoff, it'll be an additional sort of stamp saying that more sediment ponds need to be created, or more features similar to sediment ponds need to be created, because they are providing an additional biodiversity value, whereas some others might just provide biodiversity, or there's others that might just provide soil capture and nutrient capture. This is kind of bridging the gap between the two, even though they look very polluted and unattractive, that actually in terms of biodiversity below the surface, they are doing a lot more than we originally thought.
Yeah. Cool, yeah. Yeah, we'll probably start with that actually, that's good. Good.
That was really good, yeah. Can I add a few bits just for context in terms of the video? That might be still starting to repeat. So it's just for shaping the narrative of everything that's been said. So it's a very straightforward question, I guess, but what is this behind you?
Yeah.
And how did it get there?
Okay.
Then what does it do? If you can kind of summarise that in as layman terms as possible, that would be really useful for anything that are at the peak.
Yeah. So behind us is two sediment ponds. And sediment ponds, there's a lot of confusion in how to define them, of what a sediment pond is. But we have used it, or I've defined it as sort of a body of an artificially created.
Can we start again? Because I think you know where you want to go.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've got it on my.
Yeah.
Yeah. So behind us is two sediment ponds. And a sediment pond is an artificially built water storage area which collects sediment and nutrients that would otherwise, particularly from runoff events, that would otherwise end up being transported and deposited to riverine ecosystems. And then, therefore, it has a negative effect in terms of the pollution and the water quality within those riverine systems. So, yeah, a sediment pond essentially stores the water, keeps the nutrients in there, rather than going downstream and into various water bodies.
And tell us about this may be a question for other people, but I think it'd help to have it. What are the comparisons before and after implementation of these?
Good question. So before, obviously, before these were actually built, it was just a runoff area. So where this fence line is here, the water just used to run straight across and directly into the water body. But now they've redirected it, so the water flows through flows through under the land, through the ponds, and then back out into the ditch. So they've actually sort of almost redirected the water to flow through these ponds. So before, obviously it used to run straight down, but now the impact is that it's settling out through these ponds.
And so the water keeps flowing, but the sediment stays.
That's the theory, yes.
Could you say that?
Yes. Yeah. So the idea is that the water flows through, but the sediment actually settles in these ponds, and it's essentially stored here.
And just if we can summarise this as well, it's probably been said within longer answers, but could you explain the biggest benefits to farmers when they add these sediment ponds within that?
Yes, yeah. I think one of the biggest positives for farmers and landowners actually building these is that it's actually storing the sediment on their land. So if they wanted to, and if they chose to, they could either redisturb the sediment and put it back onto the land, or they could dig it out and use it back on their land for whatever they desire to. So one of the benefits is having it still on the land, it's still usable. Whereas if it ends up in a river, you can't go and claim that back. So by keeping it on the land, it's providing a new source of potentially cost saving in terms of redirecting this sediment and nutrients back onto the land.
Cool. And I think I've just got one more. You mentioned earlier when we were walking up here about some really bad runoff events.
Yes.
Could you tell us about some of those really bad runoff events?
I'm not sure how, if I'm allowed, because the woman I was working with, originally I got approached by West Midlands, BBC.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, yeah, no, it's too contentious. So I'm not sure how much she'll want me to show.
Could you speak around that, like, kind of vaguely, and maybe say, start with a runoff event is?
Yeah.
Yeah, explain what it is, how bad it could pop.
Okay.
Get. Yeah.
Okay. So a runoff event is essentially where you have high rainfall and poor soil, which ends up causing soil erosion on the farmer's fields, resulting it to find a flow pathway through a field into whether it's a ditch or stream, and then essentially just ends up in that watercourse. But here, obviously, it's been directed into these sediment ponds. If these ponds weren't here, then sediment events can be pretty drastic and devastating. It's more the time and money that it's actually cost them in terms of having to clean everything and essentially just, if ponds are damaged as well. So if the pond ends up filling and damaged, then they're gonna have to spend money fixing that. So it can lead to either essentially the ponds being damaged or the farm being damaged or even the farmer's field being damaged, where it all comes down to cost and money at the end of the day.
Cool. Just finally from me, I think just get one summary of the community impacts you mentioned. If you could say it in like a more succinct way, it's like it's prevented helped to keep the water quality high as well as prevent issues happening further down.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so in summary, really, these ponds have helped in various ways, whether it's looking to improve water quality, prevent downstream flooding, protecting assets, protecting farmers' fields. So there's a whole host of essentially really positive benefits that come through building sediment ponds.
Lovely. I don't know if you need to speak about it. Is there any sort of issues with getting farmers on board? Is that something that would be relevant to your narrative?
No, because I presume we'll talk to...
You'll talk to James.
Yeah. Talk to James, okay. So yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. Excellent, I'm happy enough.
Yeah, so if you start with just your name and your, I suppose, former title.
Yeah, James Turner. I'm now the retired farm manager for Brackenborough Estate, the in-hand farms on the estate.
And so we'll start with how long ago were these ponds introduced, and why did you introduce them? Why was it important to introduce them?
We put these ponds in 2009. The site was identified by Lancaster University, who were looking for sites where they could trial MOPS ponds, which is mitigation of phosphate. This site was identified, and it worked well in with our farming scheme, and so we allowed Lancaster University to actually build and create these schemes, and they were on pretty constant monitoring for about 10 years. So there were students and PhD graduates coming down here on a weekly basis for about 10 years.
Okay, and what purpose do these ponds serve now? What do they do?
Well, they're a lasting legacy of what the original plan and design was for, which was to drop out sediment, which is rich in phosphate, to drop that out in these ponds to such that the outfall into the river, which is just a quarter of a mile away, was free of phosphates, basically.
What's the issue with phosphate?
Phosphates is basically a contaminant. It has two elements to it. Firstly, it rides on the back of sediments, so it sticks to sediment. So if you're losing sediment from the field, you're basically losing soil, but you're also losing, you know, some of the fertility. So we're wanting to capture that. And it becomes a problem once it gets into the river and waterways, and ultimately into the sea.
What can it do in rivers and waterways?
It's one of these chemicals I forget what the word is. You'll have to forget me. Nutrients, I think, is right. So phosphate is one of the nutrients that causes algae problems in rivers, which is something we try and avoid.
Yeah, excellent. So these two ponds here, how were they built, and what? Because I remember you saying that they used to have a runoff.
Yeah.
Here, and that was you. Redirected it, or
yes, we redirected. So there was an open gutter, which was no more than sort of a metre and a half across and maybe a metre deep, that took surface water and a little bit of drain water down the edge of this field. This area here was always marshy and boggy, and although cattle would graze it, it wasn't really much use to agriculture, and we would never silage or do any agricultural arable operations close to it. And so it was a sacrificial area, and by building these ponds here, it enabled us to create 2 acres of wildlife habitat at the same time as serving the purpose of the MOPS ponds.
Brilliant. And you mentioned before about
and hey ho, here we are, the first swallows of the year.
Oh, wow.
They arrived with us yesterday, the 14th, and here they are feeding on the insects over the ponds already. They've just dived into the second pond there.
Oh, yeah. No,
I will get those straight after this.
Okay, yeah, quickly then. So you've mentioned the type of wildlife. So you've introduced barn owls, there's voles.
No, we haven't introduced. Barn owls have come naturally because of the habitat here.
Explain a little bit about that then.
Okay, well, by leaving this roughness of an area that there's neither grazed, or has any agricultural operation on. You can see we've got these tussocks of grass and the residual wildflowers that we sow on the side. And they provide habitat for voles and mice and other insects and other invertebrates. And so then you get the predators that look for those, barn owls being one. So in the barn behind, we've put a barn owl box in, and it's been used every year till last year when a kestrel got in there first. And I haven't looked this year to see who's in there, because the barn owls would normally, they'll be sitting on eggs now.
Excellent, okay. I think that's it. Dane, anything else?
Just maybe a summary one of the benefits that you've seen since, what it was like before and what it's like after implementing them.
Benefits, yeah. So has it had any additional, other than the wildlife, mm-hmm. Maybe summarise the benefits. So the benefits are that we've captured the nutrients from the soil. It's had impact on wildlife. So yeah, if you could do that, that'd be good.
Okay. Yeah. So the legacy of the ponds, I think, beyond the initial plan, which was to retain phosphate on the land rather than let it go into the river, is that it's provided sort of wildlife habitat here, and it's still working. And the anecdotal evidence that the researchers have continued to do is that the difference in the water coming into the ponds and what's leaving the ponds is, the nutrients have been dropped out. So we're hopefully putting clean water into the river rather than perhaps slightly contaminated water.
Brilliant. I do have actually one more question. Thinking slightly bigger on a larger scale, would projects like this, are they beneficial to the wider farming, the wider rural environment? Are these quite common?
They're not at all.
No.
And farming has drained wet areas, and a lot of farmland that used to have natural ponds have gone now. Ponds are just great magnets for all sorts of wildlife. If we were able to have a pattern of these type of ponds throughout our farming system, it's surprising the biodiversity that it would lend to.
So yeah, I'm Chris Turner. I'm former catchment sensitive farming advisor for this farm. Yeah, so we're on a light sandy loam here, a freely draining soil, which should be able to accept all the water that falls out of the sky. But we were seeing, if you look up there with a dip in the fields, where you can see the wooden rails, there was water coming through that. And as it was coming down this field, it was starting to rip up the soil and bring the soil down. So we had a rill that was about this wide and about this deep, running all the way down to where we're standing now. And so the question that we were asking is, well, how can we stop those rills from occurring? And we had a farm walk here, and we had a bunch of farmers, and we were starting to look at trapping the sediment in the hedgerow here. And they all asked, how do we keep the soil up in the field there? Because we don't want to be digging it out down here. So that's where our discussion started.
And so just explain the impact that something like that would have had on this, just this field in particular.
Yeah, so just in this field, when it comes to, first of all, you're going to lose the physical area where these rills are occurring. And then if you think about every operation that happens on the field, so it might be the sprayer going up and down the field, it might be the combine trying to get the crop off, and the trailers, they're all going to be bouncing through these great gullies that are appearing in the field. And then there's that question about, well, now I've got to cultivate it afterwards. How am I going to fill all those back in again? And then this is then happening more and more, because the weather is changing, the rain is becoming more intense. And so this then, instead of happening just once every 10 or 15 years, can be happening every year. And so we really wanted to think of some solutions. So James himself had thought of one of the solutions, understanding where these flow pathways were. And we were looking at our phone app earlier on with showing the erosion likely erosion rills and where they would occur. And in fact, those maps turned out to be exactly where the rills are in reality. So a couple of things we've done. Firstly, we started by trapping the sediment down in some ponds here, in the ponds that we've looked at earlier on. And secondly, digging a ditch and intercepting the flow of the water before it reached this field, and taking the water off before it had erosive power to start removing the soil. But the third thing that James has done, which I've been really, really impressed with, is because when I came here before, this soil was a kind of pinkish red colour. It was lacking in organic matter, and it was fairly loose. It was easily erodible. And now I'm looking at the soil and I'm seeing a darker, earthier colour, much higher organic matter. I'm looking in the hole that where I'm pulling soil out. I'm seeing good soil aggregation. I'm seeing the roots of the barley is much more healthy. And so that is basically the glues that are holding the soil together. So two things: stop the water from running at pace through the field and diverted that off, and improve the structure of the soil in this field to make it far more resilient. And again, it can start working to infiltrate and percolate that water through the soil profile, which is what it should be doing in its natural state.
You alluded to the fact that weather is becoming more unpredictable and
erratic.
There's more rain. So for something like this is one example of soil runoff, soil erosion. How prevalent is this in the rest of the country, issues like this?
Well, it's certainly prevalent in this catchment, and actually looking wider across the country, we are seeing this happening everywhere. It's quite sort of shocking. If you look at photographs or satellite photographs in 2014, you can see the whole of the North Sea and the Irish Sea turning brown with the amount of soil that's coming off the land. And when you look at a field like we are looking at today, you know, with a sown spring barley, there's still a bit of bare ground until that crop is up and away. And so it's in a vulnerable position. So if we get intense rainfall now, If this soil was in the condition it was 10, 15 years ago, then we would just start to see that soil mobilised and move off the field again. But it's that combination of improving the soil health and managing, understanding flow pathways and intercepting them has made all the difference. So if more people can do this, then we can make a bigger difference at a bigger scale.
Okay. I was just asking about the ponds quickly. So the project that Charlie's doing, so the pond is sort of multifaceted with its benefits. So one is the runoff, but the other is the benefits to the environment. Could you talk a little bit about the environmental impact of the ponds and why that's important?
Well, the first thing we've always thought about in terms of catchment sensitive farming is thinking about the source, trying to stop the problem at source. You know, so if we can keep the soil on the field rather than filling up ponds, if we can keep the nutrients on the field where it's growing a crop, then that's beneficial to the farm business, it's beneficial to society, and we're not going to end up with that nutrient unnecessarily going into the water course. The ponds offer a really good monitoring point, because James can go and look at those ponds and see, after a heavy rainfall event, is soil still being mobilised? If so, where is it coming from? You know, and the more monitoring points you have, you can pinpoint if it might be a neighbour's field or something that soil's coming down. Or if it's your own field, you want to be able to do something about it. So it's important from a farm management point of view to be able to sort of understand how healthy your entire kind of landscape within your control and your farm is. But then it's also good to know that your nutrients are not leaving the farm and feeding the fish where they're not doing any good. So, you know, can you keep them where they're meant to be? So ideally we start in the field, we protect the source, we prevent soil from running off. But for those extreme events, you can't maybe trap everything, then you've got the sort of second line in defence, which is your ponds. And then think about the wildlife benefit of the ponds themselves. We've just been watching the swallows have arrived the last couple of days, and they've been gliding over that pond this morning, and the insect life in that pond. When we've seen a massive decline in insect life across the UK in the last few years, it's really good to see the insects sort of thriving there, And so all good. And I know that James is very keen on his barn owls, and he likes to watch the barn owls gliding across that meadow at night, because the meadow's rough and it encourages the voles. So it's a sort of McDonald's for owls, basically, in that spot.
Brilliant. Right, I'm done. Dane,
anything?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Just ignore the camera now. I'm Joe Lau, and I'm a farmer at High Oaks Farm.
Excellent.
Yep. So we put these ponds in about 7 or 8 years since. Oh, hold on. Started the project 7 or 8 years since. We put these ponds in about 3 years since, and what they do is they catch the runoff from the farm and from the fields further up, run them through the ponds where they can settle out the sediments and the nutrients, and then run the clean water into the river.
Why is that important?
That's important because what it means is that there is the water going into the river is much cleaner than what it otherwise would be, and also means that when we come to dig these ponds out, we can reuse the sediment and the nutrients and apply them back to the fields.
Can you sort of try and describe, they don't come from here, do they come from the far fields?
Yeah, they come from further up and then track underneath the motorway and the railway and then down to here, as well as catching some of the runoff from the farm. Sorry.
What's the sort of area that they cover?
Ooh.
Is it a big area? I'm trying to get a gauge of...
Well, like the size of the area compared to the size of the ponds, yeah, and like exactly. Sort of the outsized impact, because they do have like a pretty big impact. I'm trying to think what they'll cover now.
It does have to be exact.
40 acre, what's that, 70? Probably about 60-70 acre.
Oh wow, that's pretty big.
Yeah. So the catchment they cover is about 60-70 acre, which considering the two ponds are just 5 by 5 metres each, they have an outsized impact in terms of the water quality improvements they provide.
Brilliant. And you mentioned as well, I mentioned the prevalence, the more flooding now, mm-hmm. than climate change and what have you. Have you noticed it? What have you noticed? Is it particularly bad here? Explain again how mm-hmm. the water rose.
Yeah.
And is that common, or was that an extreme event?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've been here for about 10 or 12 years. And in that time, we saw Storm Desmond in 2015. And we've seen flooding events since. Flooding, whether it's getting worse or not, it's hard to tell now, but it seems like it will be getting worse in the future. And what that means is that ponds like these, which in those events can trap the sediment nutrients that's being picked up, have a really important role to play in providing that both that water quality improvement and also holding a bit of that water back in the catchment so that it slows it down and provide that natural flood management.
That's perfect, that's the best answer we've had so far, well done.
It's fine.
And just a little bit about, can you talk about the sort of the impact on wildlife, if you mm-hmm. notice more? And I noticed there's quite a lot of bird's nests up there.
Jackdaws.
Yeah, is that what they are?
You got a gun?
Yeah. Maybe you don't.
No, but like, I will, yeah, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Not them bastards, but there has been. Yeah. There's been improvements elsewhere.
Yeah, what kind? What have you seen?
So as well as the improvements in water quality that the ponds provide, they also provide a new habitat, particularly for things like invertebrates, mareflies, damselflies and the like. And as well as that, because they're providing cleaner water for the river, we've seen trout come back upstream for the first time in a lot of years. We've seen an explosion in heron population, partly because there's more food for the herons, and also because the invertebrates in the river itself, compared to the ones in the pond, they're doing much better. And as well as the river habitat, we've seen more, I would like to think we've seen more in terms of like songbird populations. Yellowhammers have come back in particular. Well, I've messed up at the end there.
That'll be all right. Start from yellowhammers have come back.
Yeah. Right. So yellowhammers have bounced back a bit. They declined a bit when we first came, but they seem to be coming back quite a bit, quite like hearing their chirp in the summer. And we've also seen a lot more blackbirds this winter as well. Whether that's partly to do with the ponds, I'm not sure, but all across the landscape, it feels like there's been an improvement as part of the wider project.
Brilliant, okay. I think I'm happy with that. Yeah.
Right.
Awesome, Joe, thanks.